Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and faint not. That is Isaiah 40:31. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and I'm thrilled for you to be joining us for episode number 239 of the Orphans No More podcast. Are you feeling weary today? Do you need strength? Your strength renewed? I do. I'm starting to feel a little bit better. My kids just got home from their first day of school at the time that I'm recording this podcast. And the first day went well, you know, and even the administrators look like they sort of survived the day. So day one down, and we're hoping that by the time you hear this, they'll have been in school for a full week. And I hope that the story is even better as we progress. You know, we've been out of school, away from school, 7 months. Kids around here have been out of school. So it's a little bit crazy. And I know I'm not alone. Our guest today is pretty much in the same boat, right? We're all kind of navigating, you know, are your kids doing remote learning? Are they doing that hybrid thing where it's part remote, part in person? If your kids are in person, mine are in person, it's a very different looking school day. And even pickup today, drop off, you know, seemed to go pretty smoothly, but pickup, they were dismissing our middle school by grade. And first, all the kids who were taking the bus home were dismissed, and then I had to wait until the very end, and then finally my son came out, and you know, so that took much longer. There was so many more parents who were opting to drop their kids off and pick them up instead of doing busing, so that they don't have to wear the masks the whole time and all of that. So different, and everybody, you know, I did hear one parent honking their horn in the line. Apparently, we weren't moving fast enough, but overall, it seemed to go pretty smoothly. But I'm going to be talking to another adoptive parent today, and stay tuned for that. Please let us know how you've been encouraged by this show. Our job here is to encourage you and to inspire you. And we love hearing from you and hearing your stories about how you have been inspired. And we love hearing from you when you say, hey, I know this awesome foster or adoptive parent that you should have on your show, or could you talk about FASD or whatever it might be. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you really want to hear. So let us know. You can contact us on any of our social media at Justice for Orphans. You can contact us on our website, justicefororphansny.org. And also you can email me directly at sandraflackjfo@gmail.com. And I also want to thank everyone who turned out for our virtual fundraiser, There's No Place Like Home. If you didn't get to see it on Thursday evening, the 17th, you can still watch the 90-minute event. It's still live on our website. Just go to justicefororphansny.org, and you can find it there. You can also find it, I believe, on our YouTube channel, which is Justice for Orphans also. So there's lots of ways you can still watch. You can still give. You can text to give. You can give, donate online on our website. All that information is there for you. So if you didn't get a chance to watch it, it's worth your 90 minutes to just kind of sit back, you know, and relax one evening or one morning and watch it. Watch it with your families. We have super funny Christian comedians who came out and did their performances, and we had some testimonies from some of our board members who are foster and adoptive parents along with their kids. We had the premiere of our video that shows the work of our organization. So lots of super stuff, great stuff going on there. So it is a 90-minute time of entertainment. So we hope that you hop on and still check it out. So again, you can find that at justicefororphansny.org. All right. Well, today I am bringing back an adoptive mom who's been a guest on this show a couple of times, at least that I can remember. Elizabeth Okapinti is president and co-founder of Miriam's Heart, an organization that radically supports foster and adoptive children and families. She's also on the Orphan Sunday Stand Sunday leadership team, and she's my Jersey friend. Welcome back, Elizabeth.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here with you. It's wonderful to see you.
Yeah, we're seeing each other. Our listeners might just listen to this, but we're seeing each other and we're reconnecting because we both are adoptive moms. We have some trauma kids in our homes. We've been doing this for a long time. COVID really kind of put a new spin on things. So that's what we want to talk about. But for our listeners, Liz, tell us a little bit about your kids, the dynamics in your family, who you got there under your roof.
Yeah, well, thank you again. You're kind to have me, and I'm happy to be here with you. I've got a bunch of little ones at home, and I say little, they're really not that little anymore. I've got a 22-year-old, a 15-year-old, and very close to being 13-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 10-year-old at home. We have two kiddos who were adopted from South Korea. And occasionally, right now we don't have a foster placement, but we are licensed foster parents in New Jersey, kind of kicking around at what point do we close our home, based on what our kids' needs are. So we love having extras, we do, but I feel like we might be approaching that season of maybe closing our home and looking to maybe make some changes legislatively in New Jersey. So yeah, that's a little bit about my kiddos. We also, of course, have a couple of dogs, a couple of cats, a couple of fish. And, of course, that is all headed up by my incredible husband, Jimmy, who is still the kindest man I've ever met. And it's been a real roller coaster because of COVID.
I get it. Now, so how many kids is that all together under your roof? I didn't count.
Five. Yes.
Awesome. Wow. So prior to COVID, were they all in public school? Did you homeschool? What was your school situation look like?
I love the yellow school bus that would come and pick my children up 5 days a week if I was lucky. And I would do a little happy dance and click my heels as I walked back to the house with my cup of coffee. And all of them were in public school. Before COVID, my oldest has graduated from public school, but she was in college and life sort of had somewhat of a routine before everything was kind of pulled out from under us. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. So now also prior to COVID, because I know you and I know that you direct Miriam's Heart, a ministry kind of similar to JFO.
Yeah.
And you were going back to college, right? Tell us what you were doing prior to COVID.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm studying for my master's too. And I say that's funny just because it's like so much has shifted. So I'm still studying for my master's, but I had hoped to be done by probably the end of the fall now. I had to kind of slow down because I was doing two classes at once and just cranking through it. And my routine that yellow bus brought me completely stopped. So I had to kind of slow down and make some shifts. But I am studying for my master's in psychology in youth and adolescent development. So it's been a real interesting journey because I think I really wanted to understand the phenomenons that we've both seen in the lives of children and adolescents, specifically those touched by adoption and foster care or complex developmental trauma. I wanted to understand why I was seeing certain trends in those kids, in my kids, and what the science said around that, to really try to capture, to marry the science to what we were seeing in the families that we support.
And you understand that because I know you're a TBRI practitioner too,
yes.
Right? So you already kind of know the brain stuff and
yes,
trauma and all of that.
Yeah. And I felt like as a person of faith, it was important to me, because truth is truth, right? So it was important to me to figure out how to marry up all of my beliefs in redemption and healing and all of the things we've learned through the TBRI methods and all the things we've learned from Empowered to Connect and all of these things, and really understand what is science saying about those things, because I was confident and still am confident that those things don't contradict each other. And where they do, there's more to be learned. There's yeah. something we're missing, because God is true and he's perfect. So anytime there's something that doesn't make sense or something that we're seeing, there's got to be a scientific and a spiritual explanation for those things.
Absolutely. I love that. I love how you took that passion and the knowledge that you have and you're pursuing your master's to really dig deep into that. So back in March, I know it was March here in New York, so probably very similarly to Jersey, yes. when everything shut down, including and especially the school. So the yellow bus didn't come, and it didn't come for like 7 long months. What impact did that have on your family, your kids? Like, how did your kids do through that?
I think for them, I think it really brought out a lot of anxiety in my kids in terms yeah. of just their routines and what was normal and expected for them. It certainly did that just across every domain. I think there were losses for us. So, or there was an impact for us. So my husband yeah. is a dentist. Dentist's office were closed in New Jersey. So we were okay. getting to a place yeah. where financially we had nothing. My siblings sent us money. We were at that place where I was making my last grocery order and sort of preparing us for what does this look like for us if I can't buy food? You know, I had a number of weeks of food, because this is just how I was raised to always have canned goods and beans and stuff. But I had done all the things to kind of, you know, ration. I started to ration food, believe it or not. I started to write dates at things, because you know how kiddos are. So I had, and of course this is really horrible with kids who've got trauma background and yeah. you know, to just,
yeah.
right. So there was that whole thing that we had to kind of navigate through. So there was just losses of income. There was losses of just being able to reach out and kind of touch family members and see each other, relationship loss there. It was just completely chaotic in every domain that we could possibly feel something normal. All of that, just like everybody, it was taken yeah. from everybody, whether it was, you know, those places that you go to for comfort, whether it's church or your social book club, whatever that is, was taken from all of us. So whether it was a date night with your spouse or that kind of stuff, we had to get real creative to just stay sane. In a way. And so the impact, I think once the kids kind of got into the routine of the remote learning, that got a little bit better for them, but it was like a countdown to summer, because we just were like, well, maybe summer will feel normal. And then we all know that it really didn't. It was just the summer. I call it the summer that wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad has, Alzheimer's, like he's in the beginning stages of that. And I finally got to take him to a doctor's appointment. And his doctor said, this was in mid-August, his doctor, you know, they ask him because of the Alzheimer's, you know, they ask him what month it is. And he knew it was August. And the doctor asked him what year it was. And then he said, 1984. I thought to myself,
that'd be awesome.
I'm sure 1984 was a much better year than 2020. I wouldn't want to admit that it's 2020 either. But I had a good laugh out of that. But it was crazy. And so Liz, how did your two adopted kiddos How did they do? Because I know mine really, really struggled with that sudden and abrupt loss of school and loss of routine. My youngest one especially didn't do well with the remote learning stuff. That doesn't work for him. He needed super structure. He needed social. And it was just a lot, like you said, anxiety was ramped up. How did your two, especially your two adopted kids, how did they handle it?
So I think my daughter, Lily, did all right. But she has come through a tremendous amount of healing. I have a friend in ministry who will say, Lily is my hope. I have so much hope in TBRI and in therapy because I look at her and I know where she's come from. Mm-hmm. So for her, she's incredibly resilient. She's incredibly ordered. And she was really able to, almost without an issue, sort of transition into remote learning, maintaining her relationships. She also has a cell phone. My son does not. He's not quite ready. So I think she was able to kind of keep things relatively normal for herself. She plays a sport. So sports got kind of back started up a few months in. That really helped her. She did all right. My son, on the other hand, had a mental health crisis. We had Tri-County, which is like an emergent response, mental health response, mobile unit at the house. My daughter, who was also adopted by my husband, I was a single mom when we got married, similar experience with her as well, just mental health crisis and socially and emotionally incapable of transitioning to remote learning. I felt like they really didn't turn the page, you know, in terms of how the year ended and transitioning into the summer. No amount of press-ins really kind of helped him. He had therapy before COVID that he was, he had an in-home therapist before COVID, but because of COVID, it got really wonky, even just with like, can you let people in the house and all of that. So all of that had a huge impact on his mental health. And I guess the only benefit that I could share is that it really brought to light some serious needs and some, you know, it really, and so did my studies, right? So I'm studying psychopathology and I'm watching my children and I'm thinking there's some things here and it's not vague, right? So I didn't realize before my schoolwork that when you make a mental health diagnosis, it's similar to something like strep throat, right? So there's clinical things that you look for and clinical symptoms. That's why when they ask you what your fever temperature was or how long the duration or how these things sort of are diagnosed is very, very clinical. And it's the same for mental health, which I really didn't realize prior to my studies. But there were some things that really were brought to light and made so clear because we were totally on top of each other. And, you know, it became very clear that there were some needs there that were not being met. So it has been an incredibly difficult time, an incredibly difficult time for our family, for our son. And I imagine just because of what I do and what you do, just from talking to the families that were coming to us, that it was difficult just for everyone. And so our kids who've gone through trauma and loss, hopefully they have a wheelhouse around, you know, grieving these things and tools to use to work through that. But a lot of families were really struggling because we'd never seen anything like this. Never. You know,
yeah.
Families that didn't have yards, for instance, not being able to go outside. Yeah. For days on end, weeks on end. It was very, very difficult.
Yeah. And I found that I knew, especially with one of my boys, he started to self-isolate. So not only were we just home, he didn't want to come out of his room. And he doesn't even have video games in his room. He just chose to stay in there and not come out because that felt safer to him. And talking to different, you know, child welfare professionals and different parents, he was not alone. There were a lot of kids responding that same way. Did you see that in any of yours?
with my son specifically. Yeah. You know, I think it was just all too much. Maybe being around us constantly was a reminder that nothing was normal. Like, I don't call this the new normal. I never will. No. None of this was normal. And I think keeping it there is helpful for me in my mental health. Like, this is not the way we were created. Right. You know, we talk about connection a lot and what our kids need and attachment, which is just a big word for how you relate to other people.
Yeah.
So all of this is so needed, especially in young people, for healthy development. Like, they need to be around their peers.
Yes.
And when they're not around their peers, there can be a real lack of sense of self, or like, who am I? Every domain of development is sort of shaped by your peers and the social interaction. And so having none of that, or having just social interaction only with your immediate family, is maddening. I mean, I think it was maddening for the people that have no children and they were, you know, empty nesters. And it was maddening for the people with tons of children. It was difficult for us all, but certainly young people who have a history of trauma and loss, this is isolating yourself and trying to sort of lick your wounds and sort of figure out like how to navigate this.
Yeah.
I think it was common beyond just me and you, and our kids who struggled.
Right. Yeah. So what did you do? What were some things that you did during that time to help your kids navigate and come through that?
So one of the things that we did, like many of you guys probably out there, is we planted a garden, and we worked together. It was a big project. We had to clear a part of our yard that was largely a mess, unkempt. There was a point that I was really excited about the harvest that would come, but it was more about the act of doing it, you know, the sensory benefits of being outside together, working in the dirt together. All of that. We did a lot of movie nights and things like that. We spent a lot of time together, but we made it intentional. So it wasn't, you know, it was like you had to kind of create a schedule and make a plan, because there was no everyday kind of ran into the next. But those were some things. But I also think giving space for, you don't have to be around me all the time. Like, it's really okay if you need a calm down spot, or you need to go in your room and just listen to music on headphones because it's, you know, the dogs are barking and that's annoying, or I'm annoying, or the sound of my voice has suddenly become, you know, it was so difficult for everyone to give a voice to that and say, it's really okay that this is not a good situation. Like, it's okay to not be okay. Yeah. Is something that we did with our kiddos, and just trying to make it fun. So even in those grocery orders that I would Instacart to the house, you know, I started like adding like soda to the order. I know this sounds crazy, but like, we don't drink a lot of soda in our house, but it became this luxury for my kids.
Yeah.
To, you know, just have, you know, bubble gum or Tootsie Rolls or so, just a little treat to just encourage them. On, you know, Fridays we would have soda with pizza, and we started actually also doing a Sabbath, and we had done that before COVID, but it became really important during COVID, the dark days is what I like to say, when it was just no restaurants open and, you know, you just felt so confined. We would you know, we're kind of, as Christians, you know, Sabbath has this negative connotation. And I remember Jed Medefind from CAFO talking about how he had started to create Sabbath as like a day that you did things that maybe on other days you wouldn't do. So they had toys and games that were in a special place that they would pull out on Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And I was inspired by that.
Yeah.
So we started eating cake on Sabbath, and we started doing things that were specific to Sabbath. And we would put the phones down, we'd put the computers down, because the virtual stuff could wait. But on this one day, I wouldn't work on school, my kids wouldn't work on school, and we would just enjoy each other. We would eat carbs and pasta, and we would make a cake, or we'd buy a cake. And we tried to make Sabbath set apart and special. And it just made it, it felt like, you know, going back, you know, 100 years, but it really did make it nice. And it, my older daughter, who's in her 20s, her friends started to come to our Sabbath. Like, they started to come to our home. They wanted the pasta and they wanted the backyard, you know, sitting under the lights. And that really did create this, this time that was special and set apart during those difficult weeks.
Well, I love that. I love that. And then self-care, as we all know, is so vital for our survival. You know, we can't pour out of an empty cup. So what did you do during that time, or what do you still do in the line of self-care?
It's so hard, right? But I think specifically speaking to moms out there, I really am giving you permission, and I know, Sandra, you are giving permission as well, to take care of yourself.
Yes.
And whatever it is, like, there are little things that I would do. They're just little things, and I think self-care is about the little things.
Yeah.
It's about putting on lipstick, even if you have nowhere to go, mm-hmm. or lighting a candle, or buying yourself a super soft blanket that you wrap yourself in, or spending time in prayer alone with the Lord. Or sleeping in, or going to bed early. You know, these things that especially were helpful during those difficult weeks. But I think they're things that, as parents, we often don't give ourselves permission for. And I don't think that's right. I think that we, as much as we are able, especially when we're pouring out, we're serving others, and we're looking to meet the needs of little ones who have, you know, complex developmental trauma or other health or, you know, other issues. It's really important. So whether it was like throwing on headphones and taking a walk, getting outside in the garden, like, I would just sit out in my garden for hours. And I realized in that like, we had church bells, and I just would start to cry listening to the sound of the church bells, and realizing hundreds of years ago, those church bells were probably even more meaningful when you couldn't just pick up a device and put music on and listen to music, you know. And I was so ministered to by that, and just talks in the garden with my neighbor, who's a master gardener, who taught me lots of things, you know, stepping away from the screens. And I actually had created a spot in my house we call the Tranquility Room. And it's really nothing special. It's just something that it's a four chairs with a cushy ottoman in the middle, and it's a conversation place. It's not really a place for work or computers. And I just moved furniture around in my house to create this space. It's probably 8 feet by 8 feet. It's not huge, but I just was like, I need it for myself. I need this, I call it this tranquility room, because I needed that peace, and I needed to give myself permission for that. But in doing that, and this is why I encourage moms and dads to do this, it taught my kids to do it too, to listen to their bodies, to take care of their soul, to rest when they needed to rest, to eat when they needed to eat, to drink when they're thirsty, you know. And it gives a space for that. It's like it really created that permission for everyone in our family to come and sit and read a book or just have a moment for yourself. So yeah, those things, you know, whether it's a bubble bath or a bottle of wine with your spouse on the back deck, something, you know, do those small things. And in doing that, you model a healthy self-awareness to your kids, and it sets things right, and it puts things in order that COVID, in a sense, kind of stole from us.
Yeah.
By doing those things, you teach and you model to your children how to take care of themselves too, which is super important.
Yeah, words of wisdom. I used to, like, I don't have time for that self-care stuff, but, you know, 2 weeks into COVID and I'm like, yeah, nobody's going to survive this if I don't start taking care of me. And I've made it a priority. So it's those little things throughout the day. You know?
And it's not, you know, especially when we were financially tight, and because I know there's probably people out there that are thinking, I can't afford self-care. And we've been there, right? This is not about it being expensive. It's about being creative. And whether it's that you just go outside when the stars are out and you put a soft blanket on the ground and you just talk to your creator and just look at the stars by yourself. I think for me, and maybe this isn't the case for everybody, for me, I struggle peeling away by myself, but I know that I need that. And I feel guilty to do it, but I know that when I don't do it, I'm not nice to be around, so that everybody's like, please just go by yourself. So, you know, I think just giving yourself permission that it's like, okay, to just binge watch something on Netflix, like just go in your room and close the door, or just read a book, have a library card. And I had blogged a while back about like how to just on a budget do self-care, you know, and back when, and hopefully this will happen again soon, there's grocery stores, for instance, that have free childcare, or gyms that give you very expensive childcare when you have little ones and you just feel like you can't afford a babysitter, to just give yourself a minute, like barter with a friend, like I'll take the kids for, you know, Mondays, and can you take them on Thursdays so I can step out with my spouse, or just have a minute, you know. There's ways, don't feel hopeless, because I've been there, and we've had times where financially it just wasn't doable for me to have a babysitter, or to have, you know, the spa day wasn't in the budget, but there, you can go to the Dollar Tree and like get yourself one of those bubble masks or something, and just buy some dollar nail polish and polish your nails, or do something that's just frivolous, you know, and silly, and don't feel bad about it, because especially right now, we're just recovering from just a really difficult, especially in the Northeast, just a real difficult season of not just loss of the normalcy and the institutions in our life, whether that's school and church, but literally people losing family members, like literally people dying, literally people becoming very ill, and literal losses, you know, of life. So that's to give yourself a second to just say, that was super traumatic. Yeah. It was super difficult. And I'm so proud that I came through it.
Yeah.
You know, is huge.
Yeah. We can be resilient, really. And this can show us that, but I feel like the self-care is a vital piece of that.
Yes.
You know, we planted a garden too. And initially my thought was it was something to do with my son to build some structure in an activity for us to do together. But I found at the end of the day, I would go out there, you know, after it was not so hot, but we would have to water it, and to just be out there and see these plants growing, water them, and just be in creation was so nurturing. Yes. You know, I loved that. And then I had gotten into, you know, when you work from home, you're sort of sitting all day at your computer and then your kids are having to do school on the computer. And I just found myself sitting. So I started, we have a long driveway because we live out, you know, in the country, and it's a long driveway walk down to the mailbox. But I started as soon as in New York, it thawed out enough to where it felt like I wanted to go out there. You know, around May, I started like, I'll just walk down to get the mail, because it was sort of, you know, our mail comes around noontime. So it was sort of that break, and I could just feel the sunshine and just really spend that walk just thanking the Lord. Like I have a thankfulness journal. So that's something I've done for years and years and years, is I'm always, you know, just thanking the Lord and practicing gratitude. And that's what I would do. Even if it was just, I'm so thankful that I can walk down, you know, take this walk, and there's sun and I hear some birds and there's a squirrel, just to be able to acknowledge, you know, I mean, it would only take me, I wouldn't even be gone, not even 10 minutes, you know, it's not that far really down the driveway, but it was just by myself, in nature, I'm getting a little exercise. This is just 5 minutes for me. That self-care.
Yes. 100%.
Taking those little breaks.
I mean, even just taking a walk, you know, I find that when I start to get in a funk, I had a friend say to me, I use essential oils. She's like, you know, diffuse orange oil and put on some worship music. And I can't tell you how much it means to have someone just tell you what to do. Because once you're in a funk, you're kind of like, I'm in quicksand, right? And you're just sinking down into this funkiness. And it was so easy over these past few months to do that, because it just felt like, and it still in some ways feels like, there's not a light at the end of the tunnel. But having those things, like a list of things that you write down. And mm-hmm. I know it sounds maybe silly, but like a list of things that you write down when you get into a mindset that is depressive or anxious, that is, you know, a list of truths, things that you know are true, people you know you can call. Like, who is your host of witnesses? Who are the people in your life that you can call when you're feeling that way, so that you don't feel isolated and alone or ashamed of, you know, we're Christians, right? Why should we be depressed or anxious? That's sinful, right? And that's like these false narratives that I think sometimes church folks can reinforce for each other. And we wouldn't do that, say, for strep throat. We wouldn't say, well, that's not, you really should just heal yourself. You know, we wouldn't do that to each. And certainly, I believe God could 100% heal strep throat without medical attention or an antibiotic. But he's also given us the blessing of medicine and antibiotics. So we don't always need to suffer through these things, and we don't need to do it alone. And we definitely don't need to feel ashamed. And so having these people you can, you know, that you write down, who are the people that I can call to pray for these things that I feel ashamed of, that I know won't shame me, you know, and write those down when you're in a healthier mindset, so that when you're not in a healthy mindset, you don't feel like you have to try to think through things that you're not capable in that moment of thinking through, that you have that at the ready, so that you know when it's a difficult thing. And you, kids can, this is something our kids can do too, like reinforcing the truth for them, reinforcing what tools do you have when you're feeling anxiety, or what tools do you have when you're feeling sad?
So Liz, I know here for us this week, my kids just returned to school. What does the new school year look like for you guys there in Jersey?
Well, right now my district is fully virtual. We were told our kids were going back for a hybrid situation, which I was really excited about for everyone but my son. I felt like my daughters really were needing the normalcy of the routine, even if it was a limited number of days. And right before school started, they changed course completely and wrote to the governor asking for permission to go fully remote. So they are all, it's chaos, you know, they're all on their computers all morning, trying to navigate four kids going in four different directions with four different classes at the same time and finding quiet space for them to do school in a home setting when I'm not the teacher. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? It's not me teaching my children in the way that I want to. It's the teacher's teaching, but they're not, you know, in person with my kids. So it's been a challenge. Some New Jersey towns that are a little bit smaller, I do think have a hybrid right now, but ideally, you know, when it's safe, I feel like we maybe could have just said we're delaying the start of the year rather than sort of try to do this, you know, and not really do it well. You and I both know it's almost like we know too much, right? So we know that when you're in a fear brain, you're not learning.
That's right.
So just all the uncertainty around COVID, all the uncertainty around the new school and way of learning and the virtual and the new apps and the emails and all of that. You know, my 10-year-old said to me, I just don't think that this is the way that I should be meeting my teacher. And I was like, you are correct.
Yes.
This is not the way that you should be meeting anybody, you know. Used to make fun of like virtual dating, you know, like this is not normal. So I don't call it the new normal. I call it the not normal. So it's been a challenge, and trying to keep it light for the kids as much as is possible, you know, is really sort of a coping mechanism that we have, because our kids deserve to have a normal school experience, and they've gone through a lot. And so it's just one more thing that foundationally could develop resilience in our kids and help them to sort of storytell with when they are parents, their children, how crazy it was to, you know, lose everything pretty much without notice, in just a cascade of weeks and weeks and weeks of just feeling, you know, so sort of isolated because of this disease. But yeah, I think our schools, the hope, I believe, is that come December, we would open in a hybrid way. But I don't really know if that would happen or not.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, we're back and our school is doing a hybrid. My boys have IEPs, so they can go all 5 days and do it in person. But everybody, there's just sort of this ominous, like, it's only a matter of time before everything shuts down again. So it's kind of like, you know, that is not helpful.
No.
And that doom and gloom and, you know, just waiting for the other boot to drop kind of thing. So, I mean, I'm praying that we just stay open. Like, could we just stay open and, you know, but, you know, colleges all around us are, you know, shutting down one by one. I mean, college kids are a little bit more,
yes,
you know, free flowing compared to what you're going to get at schools. But, you know, we haven't even hit, you know, flu season yet to see if, you know, to see what is going to happen. So, you know, we're all kind of navigating this unknown, uncharted territory. And that's where we really have to keep our eyes on the Lord and just be advocating for what our kids need. You know, and I know that you work through Miriam's, you're working with other foster and adoptive families. Are you seeing similar stuff with them?
Yes, 100%.
Impacts of this?
Yeah. And I think for a lot of them, initially, you know, I don't know if this happened in New York too, but I felt like our governors were very much in step with each other, and the governor of Connecticut. So probably this happened by you. They closed parks by us because it's not because the park was a danger. It's that people weren't listening, right? And they weren't taking precautions and they were letting their kids play. And so it kind of wrecked it for everybody, right? So there was a point where we had families that are, you know, in apartments and things, and they're stuck in, you know, a 2-bedroom apartment without outdoor space. And we had 2 particular families in crisis that came to us in the spring that we kind of guided through and mentored through and reached to our therapy team and just gave them some tangibles. Cause I think for people, it's so helpful to just have, okay, when this happens, this is what you do. Because when you're in that elevated moment, when something's going on in crisis in your family, not only is your kid not able to think and regulate and make good decisions, we also get dysregulated by those things and we can't think and make good decisions. And that kind of stuff was happening in our home. Our case manager said to me, well, what would you tell a family that was experiencing the things that you're going through with your son? And it helped me so much to kind of focus in that way. Like, what would you tell someone going through this? And I said, I would create a list of if-thens. If this behavior happens, then this is how I'm going to respond to it, and go over that with my child and have real concrete, you know, if then situations for my child. And that really did help us to kind of navigate those moments where you just feel hopeless or you're in that fear response mindset. So you can't even think, you know, it definitely did help us to navigate through that because it gave us a definitive, tangible thing that we could do to address the behavior that we were seeing. And it also helps set the expectations for our children that this is how we're going to handle this, and gave our other kids who maybe weren't having the behavioral challenges at that time sort of an expectation that it was okay for them to know what to expect and that they didn't have to be a part of the chaos. They could peel off and put their headphones on and, you know, protect their own mental health and protect their own self and take care of themselves while mom and dad were handling the adult things, you know? So we definitely across the board, our families were struggling. We have a bunch of mentor groups that kind of get together. It was almost like they were just surviving. And, you know, I realized that we don't want people just to survive, but in a global pandemic, when the world is in chaos around us, maybe surviving is actually thriving. You know, like if you're just surviving and you're listening to our conversation and you feel like you're just surviving or you've just survived for the past few months, good for you. You survived and you were resilient and you made it through and you gained, you know, a wheelhouse of skills around how to navigate a global pandemic that shuts down our entire country within a matter of weeks. Good for you. We celebrate you because this is history-making stuff that we've kind of waded through with our children. Yeah. And, you know, if we've messed up, you know, go back and talk to your kids and ask them to forgive you for the things that you need to be forgiven for. And, you know, forgive each other for the things that have happened to each other and keep it moving, you know, because this has been an incredibly trying time for so many of us that I know one person that I think has just had a really amazing time, and she had her baby in the last few weeks of February. Aww. And so she was able to just stare at her baby for weeks and weeks and weeks. And her husband was able to be home for a little bit longer than probably they expected because he's a medical professional. And I just would just Facebook like gloat over them because it was just such a beautiful opportunity for them to just nest with their baby and just focus there entirely and just celebrate each and every moment with their baby. I was like, you guys have, this is so great. Cause really for them, not anything changed, you know, but for the rest of us, it was a lot of change, a lot of waves to kind of navigate.
Yeah. And still, we're still all in that space. I mean, some things have opened up, but still, like you said, this is not the new normal. I think it was Ruby Johnston I interviewed her on self-care, and she said, I don't call it the new normal. I call it the new reality. And we don't really like this reality, but it's the one we're living in, right? So we have to learn how to navigate. And some days it's just, I survived today. We made it through today.
Yes.
And cut ourselves some slack, give ourselves some grace, and others too. You know, I think others, especially coming together, like our kids with school today, it was like, you know, the drop off for parents, dropping off students was 10 times longer than it used to be because that's what you're doing. So then it's like, nobody knows where to go and the line is taking longer. One person honked and I'm like, everybody is on edge. This is so, you know, different. We have to just give grace. It's not an easy time, but you can make it through. So any advice, Liz, for our listeners who are trying to navigate this? Maybe they have some trauma kids. You know, a lot of our listeners are foster and adoptive parents, not all, but many are. You know, any advice you have for us?
Well, I love this question because my initial reaction is give yourself permission to not be perfect, you know, and there is no such thing. First of all, it's all a lie. Right. And it's just change that expectation, that things are going to be the way that they used to be, at least for now. And lower the expectation. You know, like lower, you have the ability to redefine what success looks like right now. It is a unique time, right? So I think it's hilarious that, you know, professional calls are constantly interrupted by kids and animals or, you know, that we've all become really proficient at a really amazing background on video calls or just all these things that we've kind of just developed new skills around. Lower your expectations and give yourself permission to not be perfect or to. I would also say make a plan, you know, plan for what you can that will help you and your kids. Yes. Even if it is that you're not in school and there's, you know, virtual learning, I find writing to my kids, this is what the day is going to look like on a whiteboard, kind of like a teacher might, you know, you're going to have school from here to here. This is when your break is. This is what lunch is, whether you're home with them or not. So today I'm at the office, my adolescents and teens are home, but I have like a morning meeting with them to kind of say, okay, this is what the day is going to be like. This is what my schedule is. And I'll be home at this time. And that really helps them. So even, I'm not talking like, it doesn't have to be like a 15-point plan, but just have some kind of a plan. The other thing I would say is, I think something that really helped us in the difficult times was looking for ways to help others, and in the ways that we could, you know, looking out for each other, focusing on someone else's needs helps. And I know as adoptive and foster parents, sometimes you don't have the bandwidth for this. So please don't feel pressure. If you can't, then don't. But if you feel like you need, you've got kids, my kiddo's age, where mm-hmm. they can help a neighbor, or they can help somebody to carry in groceries, or, you know, we can do things to help others. It really does change the mindset. And I think just try to make it fun. I mean, this is, it's like, you know, like when your family has a stomach virus and in the moment you're kind of like, this is the worst thing ever. Yeah. And you just want to die. And then you laugh about it like 6 months later.
Yeah.
Try to look at it from the perspective of 6 months later, you know, because this is, it's really just like not what any of us signed up for 2020.
Yeah, it was not on my vision board, Liz. It was not on my vision
definitely board. Not on my vision board for 2020. I had all these great plans, and none of it really came to fruition the way that I thought it would. But there are things, there are small things that we've gained from this, mm-hmm. and skills that we've gained. And so while we're, you know, trying to kind of process the losses, it's also helpful to look to the things that we've gained.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you so much. Those are great, great advice. And I love that part about, you know, look for ways to serve others if you're able to do that. And, you know, I was the recipient of a blessing because my son had surgery a couple of weeks ago, and 3 weeks ago, probably by the time this airs. And I was in the hospital with him for 4 days, and then we came home, and that next morning somebody texted me and said, "Hey, can we bring you dinner tonight?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
I would have started crying. I would have had the
I'm like, and like, not only did she bring delicious dinner, she brought some, you know, peaches from the farm stand, and she brought cider donuts. And like, it was just like we got two dinners and two lunches out of what she brought. It was like this blessing beyond measure. And I'm like, and I don't, you know, she's a mom who's working from home because of COVID, and she has two of her own children who they're trying to do the schooling thing to. So I know it wasn't easy for her to do that. Right. She made it look easy when she showed up with all of this stuff, and she was just bubbly, and, you know, it was just, I was just so blessed. And it's, you know, when we're in a position where we can do something like that for a family, yes. You know, it's to be a blessing, you know. And then we're, you know, when we pour out and we give, we're blessed by that as well. So
100%. God never owes us, right? So if we sacrifice in some way, it's like, it's kind of a guarantee that he would never owe us. So yeah. God always would bless us back for the sacrifice. Yeah. And I think especially now, it's super important to keep things in perspective. We're very fortunate to live in a country where we have access to medicine and vaccines. Whether you want to take the vaccine or not, we're fortunate, you know, and then that we have access to, you know, food and services for our kids, and that all of these things are available to us. And it's so easy to kind of be consumed by the things that we, you know, aren't in control of and the things that we can't change. But I think when you start to do things like your friend did, it flips the script. It lifts your mood. It does all of these intangible things. And we had very, very similar experiences with this one particular neighbor who helped me with my garden. She lost her best friend to COVID. And just in the midst of those dark days and the fears and not being able to visit her when she was ill and all of that, I would send my kids over with little notes, or they'd bake a cake and they'd leave it on her deck. And because we weren't in that era, you have to go back and you didn't know, like, can I eat takeout food or all of these, yeah. You know, go back to like when it was really crazy. And it just the little things that we would do for each other. It was like we had gone back in time to a place where we were kinder and more neighborly to each other. Mm-hmm. I don't want that part of things to change. I want that to stay.
Yeah.
Because I treasured so much of that time with her, and my other neighbors and my other friends, just those little ways to just remind each other that we weren't alone in right. it. And, you know, we did care packages. We sent like, movie night in a box to the families within our network. And I can't tell you how much the people were so blessed by it. It was like a simple thing, but I was like, what would make a big difference for me and my kids right now? It was like movie theater candy and microwave popcorn and some soda and just, you know, have a movie night. And like people were freaking out because it was just this tiny gesture, right? Of just a press in of you're not alone.
Yeah.
And so if you're in that mode of sort of needing that press in, then take it and mm-hmm. ask for it. Ask people to help you. And if you're in the mode where you're, you know, making dinner and you're listening to this broadcast and you got a couple of extra portions of food, give that to someone, gift that to someone that you know is in need, or freeze it for a time that, you know, someone else might need a meal, or just that quick reminder that they're not alone, in this season.
Well, awesome advice, Liz. I just thank you for all that you're doing there in New Jersey and through Miriam's and with your kiddos. And just thank you for encouraging all of us today as we chatted.
I love you, friend. I'm honored to just have this opportunity with you. And if these suggestions are an encouragement, awesome. You know, may God just be glorified through our friendship, through the work of our hands, through even the trials of what our kids have been going through, and even the hardships that they go through emotionally. All of this, we know God doesn't waste. So we know that generations have come through hardship before, and they have emerged being called the greatest generation. And that's my hope and prayer for our kids, that as they're coming through this pandemic and all of the crazy news headlines of 2020, whether it's the murder hornet or, you know, the asteroid that's heading toward Earth or whatever these things are that are in the news, that we would use these things to build resilience in our kids' lives.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks again so much, friend. Glad to have you on.
Good to talk to you as well.
I also want to share with our listeners about some excellent training and resources for foster and adoptive parents. Ryan and Kayla North of One Big Happy Home have been on this show before. In fact, back in March, I interviewed them specifically about parenting during a pandemic. The Norths host the Empowered Parent podcast, which I highly recommend. I listen to regularly myself, and they offer online courses as well. They've got one coming up. So if you're a foster or adoptive parent and you're looking for some online, super awesome, good, vital training to help you parent your kiddos, you're going to want to check out onebighappyhome.org. You can also find them on Facebook at One Big Happy Home. I want to thank you for being with us today for episode 239 of Orphans No More. Remember, you can still check out our virtual fundraiser online. The details are on our website at justicefororphansny.org. Just click on events. We're so excited to have you be part of our team. Please be praying how the Lord would have you be involved in caring for kids in crisis. And if you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe and leave a review, and please share it with your friends on your social media. We really appreciate that. And of course, let us know if there's anyone you recommend we interview or a topic that you would want us to cover. We love hearing from our listeners. You can contact us at justicefororphansny.org. Email me directly at sandraflack@gmail.com, and find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Now that our big fundraiser is over. I'm hiding myself away to finish book edits on my book. So stay tuned to this podcast and our social media for news about the release of Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to being with you next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.